I'm Aaron Sagers, and this is Talking Strange. Aloha, spooky nerds, and welcome to Talking Strange, a paranormal pop culture show with the Den of Geek Network. And you should probably know this by now. I hope you know it. I'm your host, Aaron Sagers. I mean, I've been your host throughout all the Talking Strange, so same deal. Still your host, journalist, author, researcher of all things weird. Currently, it can be seen on Travel Channel's Paranormal Caught on Camera, also on Discovery Plus, as it happens. We have new episodes airing currently from our fifth season. And, you know, I just got back from the Strange Escapes event at Belvoir Winery in Kansas City, Missouri, I guess, as some people pronounce it. I don't think anyone actually pronounces it that way. But when I went to in journalism school and Associated Press style guide, that's how they guided us, how they instructed us to pronounce it. Missouri. No one ever says that, though. Anyhow, Strange Escapes, the Belvoir Winery at the Oddfellows home there, it's more than a century old at this point, and it is an excellent location. And of course, Strange Escapes is hosted by Amy Bruni, and she brings out from Kindred Spirits and Ghost Hunters, and she brings out a bunch of paranormal investigators and researchers such as Adam Berry and John Tenney and Chip Coffey, and then me, and I was fortunate to be there as well. So it was good times, and a lot of crazy stuff was happening as we were poking around in the dark. And as we are doing this, as we always do, anytime we're at these events, anytime we're together as colleagues, as people that are seeing what goes bump in the night, we're exchanging theories, we're exchanging ideas. And no one has the answers, no one has the rule book, but we're all working off of ideas, not necessarily strict belief, but ideas. And that's something that I'm interested about with our guest today and the person that I'm about to bring on, because she's a person that has a lot of theories, a lot of ideas, and also approaches things from a pretty unique perspective, not only with the content that she creates on TikTok as well as Instagram, but a little bit of her background, a lot of her background influences these things. And I always love talking to people in the paranormal realm that come to this community from a diverse experiential set. And she is a paranormal investigator, a licensed embalmer. Her interest in the afterlife began while growing up in an antique store. And she has a social media audience as My Bloody Galentine, where she features unique stories of grief, the afterlife, and paranormal encounters. Her name is Becky Ann Galentine, and I'm excited to bring her in now. Hey, Becky Ann, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
I'm so happy to have you. Now, we met at the Mount Washington event resort in New Hampshire. I guess that was last November?
Yep. Yeah, I still think about that one. That was a good one.
Yeah, was that a good experience for you?
Mm-hmm.
It's what are kind of your obviously I've looked through your TikToks and I get a sense of what you like to gravitate to, but what has been sort of your most kind of like cozy investigation? Because I like hotels because it means we can investigate the paranormal, but also sit by a fire and have a cocktail.
Oh, I know. Like the bed and breakfast vibe is like, it's like, do I really get to do this? Like, is this my life? Because you're a little bit spoiled with those. So if you asked me a few years ago, I would have said, I do not like the hospital, like big spooky location vibe. And now I'm like hooked on it, especially more recently. I'm like, ooh, what other sanatorium or asylum can I get to? So I don't know. I've been falling asleep a lot on investigations just because I'm like, I just feel at home.
Mm-hmm. I do like the hospitals, the prisons, the asylums. And if you've not, have you been to Belvoir Winery yet?
No, I was vicariously living through all of your posts. I was like, this actually looks like such a cool place. So
it really is.
That. Yeah.
We need to get you out there for that. And everyone that's in the audience, thanks for joining us. I know we've got a couple new folks that we haven't had in here before. So thanks for joining. Get your questions ready and throw them out there. Now, Becky, and your upbringing, you grew up in Starford, Pennsylvania?
Yeah. So it's this, nobody's ever heard of it. It's a small coal mining town. I think the population is less than 1,000. And my parents actually operated an antique store at a big intersection there. And all of our neighbors just had those row coal mining houses. They didn't really get updated. It's just very like kind of eerie driving through. And one of the main spots like in the town is like this old abandoned schoolhouse. And there was another schoolhouse up the road with the window shot out. And it was just like, you know, just like a very woodsy vibe, like that kind of haunting, you know, like you think about the areas that like Mothman and stuff like that occurred in. It's that very like middle of nowhere vibe. And my parents operated the antique store. So we were on the road every weekend. We lived upstairs and then the downstairs was a barn that was repurposed into a house. So they remodeled the upstairs for us to live in and then a bunch of dead people stuff downstairs.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're pretty much early on, you're already surrounded by these artifacts of life, even before you become a paranormal investigator.
Right. And now with the paranormal investigative lens, I look back at these experiences where we're in these homes where someone recently passed away, and I'm like 4 or 5 years old, holding on to what may have been the most significant object in this person's lifetime and holding it. And obviously, as a kid, I wasn't thinking about psychometry or anything like that. I was just like, wondering. And I started thinking more recently about how it felt like the person was still there. And, you know, a lot of these homes were very old and all the objects were still just as they left them. So thinking about that now, I'm like, I didn't stand a chance. Like there was no way I was going on like the standard career path after that.
Yeah. Were you a weird kid?
I don't like, you know, weirdo is a term of endearment in our circle. So I guess maybe I was a strange kid. I was gifted when I was 8 years old. They put me in a gifted program. So I always had like unique interests and, you know, one of the kids that played with bugs, but I don't think I was like hissing at people in the hallways or anything.
Well, that's a different level, I think. But just like being into peculiar things, like what were there? I know that you collect Ouija boards and spirit boards, but when you were a kid and you would go into these homes and then collecting items for your family's antique store, were there items that you were kind of gravitating to that you wanted to hold on to for yourself?
So I had a little cat collection, actually. I collected ceramic cats, like anything that was cat related, and my wallpaper was cat related. So, and cats are great. So I still stand by that special interest, but I wasn't like, you know, I like the greeting cards too. I remember specifically enjoying looking at the greeting cards that they had left these sentimental notes in, but there wasn't anything like metaphysical or anything that I was interested in. Rocks, though. Yeah, I did get into rocks because of that. A lot of these places, you know, people were traveling, especially like in the 20s, 30s, like, you know, when they got really into going abroad and taking things from other countries, a lot of them would have like souvenir collections. And my brother and I specifically like those kind of items.
That's a pretty cool one. I mean, it's rocks, but that's pretty cool thinking about the people when they were first traveling, those were the things that they were bringing back. So cat collection. Okay. I like that. That's a pretty good one. did you kind of learn about just the psychology of people as well, as you were kind of going through these homes? What did you learn about people overall?
Well, I guess that's the first, as someone who collects objects today, it's kind of interesting that I saw so much of people leaving stuff behind after life. It's kind of interesting because you can't take it with you. So then these families are left with liquidating these objects and deciding what they're going to fight about and what's going to be left for the estate sale. And the fact that people kind of stand in line and like run in and to grab these objects, like who's got the good objects that I want to wait in line to go grab or whatever. You know, I thought a lot about that, but It didn't affect me. I wasn't like, you know, I know that when we die. I still like to surround myself with objects with histories and feeling like a custodian of something.
Yeah, that you mentioned greeting cards. I think that's actually pretty fascinating as well, because I don't really see it so much anymore, but there were a lot of vintage greeting cards and postcards and whatnot would convey some piece of history or even folklore or superstition, things like that. So it's an interesting wealth of knowledge of a time that was passed along in greeting card form. Is that something that you saw with greeting cards that you were checking out?
Yeah, I think that might have been why we were interested in them, because the artwork's different than what we saw. It wasn't, you know, you always see that one grandma who's a little grouchy on greeting cards today, mm-hmm. but the artwork was different, and a lot of them did allude to that, like especially the older Halloween ones. And looking back, Valentine's even had like talking boards on them in the 40s. So I always think that's very interesting, because, you know, Ouija was originally a dating game. So seeing the way that the culture's changed, I mean, when was the last time we mailed a postcard to anyone? We don't really think about that. Another thing I thought was really interesting is, you know, you see all those landscape postcards, but the postcards of locations like asylums and hospitals, and it's like, greetings from this place. You know, I'm looking at one across the room for Brownsville Hospital, which was the first abandoned kind of haunted place I ever went to, and thinking about like, what were you reminding someone of when you sent that in the mail?
Yeah. Your first kind of paranormal or unexplained experience took place, I think it was 2009, right? And it was sort of, you set out investigating this as a joke.
Yeah, I think it's like, you know, I have to say as a joke, because we didn't know what we were doing. And I remember saying, hey, let's go ghost hunting, because we had heard of people doing it. But, you know, I didn't really know it was a field of research at all. And we walked there, which I feel like if you think about the projection of the paranormal into an environment, taking the action of walking instead of being like almost instantly placed in that environment creates anticipation, you know. So we're walking, we're waiting for something to happen. I have a flashlight, I have a Canon point and shoot, and like a really bad like 3-megapixel phone. And we're sitting there for about 15 minutes. And as I know today, it's all about patience, but back then it was like, it's been 15 minutes, nothing has happened. And that's when I kind of caught this blue glowing like ball out of the corner of my eye. And I remember saying, guys, did you see that? And there's like, Becky, be quiet. Like, you know, they thought I was messing with them. We were frustrated. They're ready to leave. They thought it was dumb, almost felt silly for even thinking that. And I was like, no. And we had about 15 seconds before it changes direction. So it hovers. And I would be able to write it off as maybe like some sort of weather phenomena if it hadn't hovered for about 15 seconds and changed direction, came in between my friend and I, and we both jump in opposite directions. So the confirmation of a second person being present for my first paranormal experience obviously helped propel my ability to believe in that. So after that, I remember being like what just happened? And I thought in that moment, I felt fear, because I was like, it wasn't a flashlight. It couldn't shine on a surface, and it didn't make a sound. It was almost as if everything stood still as this ball just like came towards us. And I'm like, there's nothing that could be. So the first thing I did is I had a science class the next day. It was a biology class that I was taking. I looked at my professor and I said, do you believe in the paranormal? And I had like this smug expression on my face. I was like, do you believe? Because I know it's real now. I saw something. And he was like, absolutely not. And that kind of pulled me away from the path that I was on, which was studying biology and actually getting into pre-veterinary biology. And after that, I approached the Paranormal Society of IUP and I explained my experience, and they obviously embraced it a little bit more. And that's when I started skipping class and going ghost hunting every night and being a little bit of a mess.
Mm. Yeah. Well, and I think so many people can share that experience of the starting out in the cemetery kind of as a gag and maybe not knowing what they're doing, but then you have that experience that turns you on and sends you down the path in a little bit more serious way. And well, and hopefully still having fun with it. I know you do, but people that take it too seriously without finding the fun in it, that disappoints me. I mean, be serious when you need to be serious, but also have fun with it. But it was still a while before you started to study mortuary science. What was the shift for that? Why go there?
So at a few years into like investigating, I think I kind of just strayed away from it because I was seeking that high from that experience and I didn't really have it again. And then I just kind of was living on the fringe and hanging out in like the punk scene in Pittsburgh and going to shows and just living day by day. I will honestly say I was living to die. I was like, I'm, you know, whatever happens, happens. And then a close friend of mine passed away. And for that, I people I know don't die. I was like, what just happened, you know? And she was like amazing and talented. And not that I needed to prove something or it was like this grief thing, but I just felt like I wanted to know more about what happened to her. So when I entered mortuary school, I actually thought that dead was dead. And how could it possibly be anything other than that? And then you get into mortuary school and you find morticians that are like, yeah, death is death. And we don't want to interrupt the grieving process by talking about this kind of stuff in the clinical setting or in the professional setting of a funeral home. But they all have ghost stories. And that's something I learned in the industry very quickly. And that's what this rapid change in my lifestyle was. But yeah, it was it's an interesting process.
How did pursuing mortuary science and then becoming an embalmer, how did that alter the way you personally think about death, dead bodies, the afterlife? You said that you kind of, people did tell ghost stories and whatnot, but when you're physically doing it, how did that change you?
So I'll admit that before school, I kind of was like, ooh, I love spooky stuff and creepy stuff and death is cool. But I didn't really understand what it was to sit with a grieving family and to think about the afterlife in the context of this is just a 100-year-old or 20-year-old version of what I sat in the setting, in the professional setting, in the funeral service with, is what really changed it for me. Because when I speak and I try to communicate with spirits, obviously I try not to go in with a bias or an approach that's an end all be all. But at the same time, I'm like, I'm speaking to someone that may as well have been a family member of one of those families I was sitting with and trying to give the most care for that I possibly could.
It's something that I think about when I do investigations is that, you know, my approach is like, I don't present myself as a paranormal investigator, even though I investigate. But I think of things more from a journalistic standpoint and trying to get to know someone, conduct an interview essentially without interrogating them. But mm-hmm. also, you know, when we do these events or when we have only a brief amount of time in a location, even if it's several hours, that's still a brief amount of time. We want these responses, and yet we have to try to keep in mind that if something's in there, if we believe we are talking to someone that had maybe once occupied a physical body, not to treat them as like a dancing bear or a clown or something for our amusement.
Yeah.
It's a balance, right?
Yep. And I liked what you said a little bit ago about how, you know, to be serious when you need to be serious. Now, there have been locations where I've been to, and it's like, I've been here 3 or 4 times. I feel very comfortable and familiar with the location, and whatever I've been communicating with seems to be consistent. And that's where you see the more fun kind of videos where it's like, do we really just get that? And then there are other situations like the Lost Children or the Alleghenies that my friend and I feel as though we communicated with for 45 minutes straight. I didn't have makeup on or anything. We were not attempting to record this. We just thought, you know, I feel drawn to them. I have these little slices of life where they're just like popping into my life. Like I had gone to a haunted hotel and there was a painting of them on the wall. The first time I talked about them, it went viral. I'm like, I meant to tell their story and I want to bring you into this. And when we communicated there, I was on the ground, like on my knees, like come to me with tears down my eyes. And I'm like, that would not be a situation where I would joke or really do anything because I felt like I had a level of trust. And again, like you said, if we believe that this is what's going on, I'm going to approach it as sensitively as possible.
Yeah. Although I have to admit, I do enjoy it when you tell a bad dad joke during an investigation. Is that your actual humor, is bad puns and dad jokes?
No, the first one that I posted, I didn't think that that would be the response that would happen. We had the REM pod going off and we're like, let's try this. And the first joke I could remember is a joke that I was told at a party in like 2009. And I remember this kid, Stefan, telling me this joke from a book. It was the only joke I could think of in the moment. And it came out and I was like, of course we get this like laughter. And and it went viral. And people, there was actually an article someone wrote about it and they were saying how bad the joke was. And I'm like, my joke, my actual humor is kind of akin to the movie The Burbs, like very dry humor. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just kind of got swept away into that.
I love bad dad jokes. I'm not a dad, but I love bad dad. I just like puns. And but I also think that it's a way of getting some sort of reaction. I mean, I like the normal, again, conversation instead of interrogation of, you know, how was the food here? What kind of music did you like? Yeah, or do you like, posing it in present tense? So I like, yeah, I mean, I think that that's kind of a good approach to things when you do dip into that, because it's very human.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's exactly what I love about it. And like you said, asking about the food, that's one thing that I always like to ask, especially at the hospitals, like, how's the cafeteria food been lately? And you know, at one point I was at an asylum and they said, you know, I miss the food from home and I wish I had a snack from home. And I was like, you know, that usually brings some sort of response, because people feel very passionately about cafeteria food or whatever they were presented, because my guess is it's less than ideal.
Mm-hmm. Well, with the, just going back for a moment to the mortuary science, you know, a lot of people ask, like, why would a graveyard be haunted? And I think it's a fair question and there's a lot of theories about it. For you, why do you think that why would a corpse still be haunted, essentially contain some of that energy from the living? Why would they be sticking around when they have shuffled off that mortal coil? From your theories, your experience, tell me a little bit why.
From a mortuary lens, I actually was one of those people that a few years ago would have said, I don't believe in cemetery hauntings or that they get the reputation for being haunted, until you see a graveside service where you know someone is there on the worst day of their life. I don't know if I particularly believe it's haunted by the corpses that are buried there as much as they are, you know, maybe a grieving family member who went there frequently and cried or had picnics at the graveside. Maybe they felt comfort and solace there. And that at that moment, they died themselves because they lost the most important person in their life. And I think about hauntings in that way. If we're removing the idea of the, you know, psychological projection of a haunting and people thinking at graves like Midnight Mary, where, oh, she, you know, I think it's haunted because people kind of perpetuate that legend. So from that aspect, I think that you can almost feel the sensation of one of those graveside services that might still linger for something that was very momentous for someone.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's when we talk about strong emotions leaving behind some sort of psychic imprint. Well, yeah, the loss of someone is so significant that that's like their release valve, their chance to like really have that moment. I think when it comes to dead bodies, I kind of wonder sometimes. I've been on the scene of some violent deaths and crime, and I think I wonder sometimes if and you might hear New York City in the background. It says hello to you. And I kind of wonder almost if it's almost like a therapy, afterlife therapy, that maybe they're processing their own death and have not yet been able to move on yet. They're kind of holding on to that body in some form or fashion because they're not ready to let go.
Yeah, because it had happened so suddenly or something of that nature. On the contrast of that, I also like to let people know, because one of the biggest criticisms I get is nobody's died there. Like, nothing bad ever happened. Mm-hmm. There have been no tragedies at the site. Why would they be there? And I'm thinking, why wouldn't they be there at a place like, you know, the Mount Washington? It's like you feel it almost like come to life when you walk in there. And some of the places that used to be speakeasies where people have really happy memories. But, you know, going back to what you said, there have definitely been cases where I'll reference the lost children as again, because people would believe, why would these two kids haunt the woods? And what we found was they weren't murdered, which I actually had the bias, unfortunately, going into the investigation that I felt that they had been murdered. But what actually had happened is I believe they kind of laid down by the tree. They were tired from walking. They had been lost in the woods for so long that they laid down by this tree. And when they woke up, they were no longer in their living body, and they kept walking until they reached this farmer who has this psychic dream. So I'm like, the farmer didn't kill them. They died from exposure. That is documented, but people always assume because he had the psychic dream. I'm like, what if they kept walking, found the farmer sleeping, and they were like, hey, come find us, and came to him in the dream. Like, and I never thought that my feelings and bias would change on that situation. So I think for them, the reason they're lingering is they just kind of woke up and didn't realize what had happened yet.
I think that's a really solid theory. And yeah, I agree that there's lots of places that are lively, that happy places, no tragedy, and maybe not even any deaths recorded there, but people kind of leave a little bit of that such joy that it makes an imprint on a place. I think that that's probably quite likely. Becky, I'm going to take a slight break and then come right back with you with Becky Ann Galantine, My Bloody Galantine. We have more spooky chat on the way. And speaking of spooky nerds, I'll be headed to Rooster Teeth's RTX Austin this July 1st through 3rd. And I would love to meet our Talking Strange listeners and viewers right there in Austin. I love Austin. Austin is a great city and a delightfully weird city. And RTX Austin is the world's greatest podcasting, gaming, and animation convention that brings together incredible entertainment. And really, a great community is brought together there. It's a wild weekend full of fun, surprises. You can experience just simply the best in podcasting, everything, including you can see your favorite podcast personalities over 3 days of panels, live shows, special events, meet and greets, and more. And we will be doing a special live recording of Talking Strange, joined by some local podcasters of Austin to talk about all things high strangeness connected to ATX. Okay, don't ghost me. Instead, show up in corporeal form, or you can show up in ghost form, but you still have to get a ticket. And the way you do that is go to rtxevent.com, use promo code DenofGeek to purchase your admission badge at a discount, or go to bit.ly/denofgeekrtx. So come get weird with me in Austin. See you there. And I'm back with Becky Ann Galantine. I'm curious, well, has this paranormal field been welcoming to you and your pursuit and your creation of videos and your investigative tactics? Have people overall been pretty welcoming to you in this community?
It's actually funny because a few years ago, I remember telling someone, like, I'm not trying to make this paranormal content. I'm trying to like have my career and mind my own business. And I just started telling a little bit of a ghost story on the internet and then a couple more ghost stories. And then all of a sudden I feel like I've been embraced in the community in a way. And I'm like, why is this happening to me? Like I always say that it's good to walk alongside spirits and allow them to, you know, the right people will walk alongside spirits and great things will happen to them. And that's obviously far from why I do it, but I never try to like run ahead or use them as a stepping stone to get somewhere, because that's not what's happening. It's all an accident. And I obviously posted stuff on the internet with intent, but people started finding me and they're like, can you investigate with me? And then all of a sudden, you know, last week I was in 9 different states in 9 days investigating in 4 of those states. And I'm like, how is this my life? So I still feel like the carpet has been swept underneath me. I'm super appreciative. I was just telling someone that, you know, a great friendship is a 10 on the scale of 0 to 10, but a great friendship and meshing or being able to interchange your ideas and beliefs on the paranormal and have those kind of discourses is like a 25 out of 10. Like, it's like the best kind of relationships that I find. And I really didn't know it existed several years ago.
What is, from your perspective, what does the paranormal field need?
I don't know. I think that it's hard to say what it needs, or else we would be bringing it in there if we could, because I don't know what it needs, because, you know, people say, well, we like how human you are, and we like that you're sharing these things that feel or make me feel that spirits are real and they're just people. But I can't for sure say that's what's needed. I just think that we need to be welcoming of new voices and ideas and continuing to be open to hearing other people's theories instead of being set in stone. I say that my beliefs are kind of living in a way, and they can always be changed. And I'm always willing to learn from other people. And there's been times where someone's like, I've been investigating for 6 months, or this is only my second investigation, and I'm still learning from those people. So I think just continuing to be fresh as well as being honest is what it truly needs.
I'm automatically suspicious anytime I go to a location and they're assigning me rules about some potential haunt, about the ghost likes this and doesn't like this, or this is what ghosts do or what they don't do. And I'm like, I don't think you have, you know, the signed authorization from the ghost saying, here are my preferences, here's my haunting, like, dating profile of like my likes and dislikes. It's not really based on, it's based on theories and trying to establish patterns, but it's not rules. And even those theories could be wrong. I mean, you could be dealing with a different potential spirit every time, or maybe one time they liked a thing and not the next time.
Absolutely. And it, the same way with a person, you might assume someone loves something just because you got a response. But if you haven't thought about things from every facet and like, how can we turn this over? How can we try something different? Then how do you truly know? My other personal favorite when going to these locations is when they're presenting evidence from what they received through, you know, ITC and like spirit box responses. And they're like, this is fact. We found out from this investigation. Like, there's a lot of stuff that goes into that. And I've honestly been shocked at locations, their censorship of things, people telling you got something wrong because you weren't interacting exactly how they prescribed you to. It's very interesting.
And I understand people like to, because this is unexplained and we're intrigued by it, but we also as humans like to apply order and put things in boxes. But I will just be like, you know, I get it. If you need to come up with a name to address a potential spirit by, I get it. I understand why, but you know, maybe I don't want to be called Franklin. You know, maybe you saying that makes me less likely, calling me Franklin makes me less likely to respond. I don't know. It's always kind of curious to me when we come up with names for ghosts, because it's like, how the hell do we know whether that's actually the name? We sometimes things come through that seem to correspond with historical fact and evidence, and that's interesting, but it's still working in the world of theory.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I always talk about that, I've been recently presenting on social media and the paranormal and talking about that in different circles, and how a lot of people don't know how to discern a seemingly relevant response and coincidence. And it's like, yes, you said, hey, Mr. Franklin, I would like to speak to you, and you received a yes or no response. But that doesn't mean solidly fact that you spoke to Franklin and that's what he said to you. And I think that is actually one of the biggest flaws that's happening right now, is they're like, yes, I asked for the spirit and received this response that was relevant, so that's definitively the answer.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that I find curious, and this is not, a lot of people are talking about this now. I think that there's been this nice expansion of ideas in the last few years of, just because something responds to your question, it doesn't automatically, I guess, where am I going with this? That a lot of times people think that they're interacting with a childlike ghost, and they want to be sweet and kind to the childlike ghost. Well, maybe it's the ghost of a full grown person that's just responding to those questions, because, hey, it wants to have a conversation. It just wants to be involved somehow.
My personal favorite is the childlike ghost that's actually a demon posing as a child. And that's probably the most frequent warning I receive on social media. It's, people are so impressionable. It's like, and the responsibility of having a platform in this community and saying something you believe is either fact or absolute. I will never do that. And I will never go out and say, hey, this is this, because how impressionable I see, because someone watched some YouTuber say something and now they're coming at me saying, that's not a child, or that's not this or that. And like you said, you don't know, you can't see, you're hearing these responses and you're just assuming, or you're talking it like, let's say baby talk, or the small voice, or, oh, if you just roll the ball, come here. And they're doing stuff like that. And then they get a yes. And they're like, oh, it's the little kid for sure, I'm going to cry. Or they get really emotional. And it's like, that's your perception being projected into the investigation.
Yeah. And plus, nobody wants to hear me use baby talk. No one wants to hear that. We do have a comment just from Spooky Tim. I know Spooky Tim. And okay, saying, that's why I stopped using spirit / ghost boxes. Too many false positives become evidence. It's, you know, I think there's interesting applications, but it's also very easy to fall prey to subjectivity. Let me just shift gears a little bit. You recently went to the Hollywood Forever Cemetery. That was your first time there, right?
Yep. I had been flown out to LA to investigate the theater, and that was the only thing I was able to cram in and see while I was there.
How was the experience?
I loved it. It felt like magic. I know some people, it's local to them, and maybe some people are tired of seeing it. But for me, I never thought I'd be in a position that my travels would bring me there. So being there, I don't care about famous graves, I'll be honest. I care about unique graves, or graves with like lore or history. I'm not there because of the celebrities, but seeing a cemetery that even has a palm tree in it, to me, was like, wow, this is amazing. And there's peacocks here. Like, it was just a sensational experience. And the only grave I really wanted to see was Roz Williams of Christian Death, but there was a service going on in that chapel, so I didn't get to see that one.
I'm based in New York City, not too far from you, I guess. But I'm originally from Florida, and one of my favorite cemeteries, every cemetery sort of has a different personality that reflects the area, the neighborhood, the area, the region. But one of my favorites is in Key West. I don't know if have you been down to that one?
No, I haven't been there.
Okay. Well, we're making it happen, because just the unique graves, the quirky graves, it's a lot of times, sometimes they are markers of people that were famous to the community. But then there's that interesting component that, because someone has a funny quote or a unique architecture on their gravesite, they become a celebrity, a postmortem celebrity, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly what I look for, actually. It's like the ones that, it's like, I don't care that some famous person who lived this amazing life is buried here. I care that this family kept their daughter's corpse in their home for over a year before burying her, or this guy was stood up in his coffin and his wife married him after death. Like, to me, that's like the perfect blending of like the afterlife and the living that makes me like, you know, go nuts. And I do like to see the interesting memorials as well, because it's like, you had to contract someone to make that. And some of them I'm like, ooh, how did you explain that? Like, yeah, you sat down and you're like, all right, Mr. Carver, I'm going to need this. And it's interesting.
Yeah. As far as some stories of people keeping corpses around before burying them, there is a famous one down in Key West. Well, I guess the actual marker is no longer there due to lots of hijinks that ensued, but the story of Count von Kassel, I believe his name is, and it's an interesting one. But I'm making it happen. We're gonna get you down to Key West somehow. Are you with regards to TikTok? Obviously, it fascinates me how, I guess, the paranormal spreads to any new platform and any new media. It's just a natural. Give it enough time, and people will be talking about the paranormal on any platform. But it's like paranormal and porn are two things that just seem to dominate anything automatically, early adopters on any new platform. But for you, when you're looking at TikTok, what have been some of the most impressive paranormal pieces of evidence or TikTok videos connected to the paranormal outside of your own, of course? What are the ones that are out there that have really struck you?
There was one that really, you know, I don't get spooked easily, but I'm sure it was fake, but this guy posted a video that was his own voice across the house saying, come here. And I was like, I wish I wouldn't have watched this late at night. But I think more compelling than evidence, because we can't do, you know this more than I do, we can't do anything with a video, no matter how compelling it is, not being present in that moment and knowing how it was obtained. We can only speculate. So for me, I'll watch something and I'm like, if this is real, it's amazing, but I will never, ever know. There's no way I can know this. So to me, what's really impressive is the younger community jumping on TikTok and wanting to have integrity, wanting to go through the right steps and learning how to approach research in an honest way, wanting to debunk things. Of course, we have our skeptics who are already in the community that are debunking these things, and they're doing a great job. But when I see someone who is an influencer who gets interested in the paranormal and they're like, wait a minute, I want to take a few steps back and actually treat this as a field of research and respect it, that's what really impresses me out there. And there's a few people that I'm like, they're going in the right direction. It's not about ego and getting ahead. So that's one of the more impressive things that I've seen. As far as anything else goes on TikTok, I try not to consume too much of it, because my standpoint right now is that there is a lot of misinformation and there's a lot of sensationalizing and absence of context. And one thing I like to discuss in my talks is that if there's no context, if we don't know what led up to that video, we don't know what happened 15 minutes before, we don't know the history, we don't know who was present, there's absolutely an absence of context in this scenario. Does this really have a place for us to share on social media? What value does it actually have when you only have 15 seconds, which is like a sliver of an entire investigation? So, you know, I'm interested if someone's in their house and they're like, hey, I'm home alone and I saw this. Obviously, I'm going to take a look, because how can you look away? But at the same time, it's like, it's really hard for me to, you know, really always find a reason to put weight on those kind of videos.
It is such a challenge, and not just TikTok, but YouTube, but network television, cable television, across the board, anything. This is a world I'm involved in as well, and it's a challenge, because doing a show called Paranormal Caught on Camera, right there in the name, Paranormal Caught on Camera, we're saying, hey, this is what we're going to show you. And I still struggle with what led up to this moment and what all is going on behind the scenes. Ultimately, I try to tell people that I try to speculate, not validate, as if you know, as much as possible, trying to accept the story at face value, even if sometimes I question it, try to as much as possible accept the story at face value. And then if the best thing I can do is start a conversation about it and what that might mean, or what theory that might be attached to, or what piece of folklore phenomena that might be connected to, then I find it interesting. But it is a challenge, isn't it? It's because we are interested in this stuff. But also,
I think there's an enormous power of being present and, you know, just being there while the stuff is being consumed. And the one thing I always make sure that I'm open to is when I put out my videos, if someone can debunk something, please, please do. Please feel free to walk all over me and say what you think, because I'm open to hearing it. And the one thing I've noticed about some people is if you're like, hey, I noticed that that looks a lot like this thing that I see all the time when you aim your camera at a bright light and it creates this green orb, and they're like, absolutely not, like, no way. And they're not receptive, which I think is important. So, you know, that's why I do encourage a lot of people who are experienced in the field to be looking at what's going on TikTok, because I think the more we're there, the more I've noticed people are being open to hearing new ideas, open to, you know, maybe spirits are human and they're not all demons, because it is an interesting platform.
Well, yeah, I think, like with everywhere, there's this obsession with demons on TikTok, much like on YouTube, much like on network television, and, you know, across the board. And yet I tend to find that it's not really, there's not a demon around every corner. I think demons have better things to do. If demons are out there, why, you know, they're not getting a whole lot out of me. Why bother me? I don't know.
Well, yeah. And I think that, like, presenting that alternative viewpoint, because I'm like, with television, you're able to communicate with the person who uploaded that. And you can actually ask on the ground level, hey, when you uploaded this, or when this happened to you, why are you feeling this way? Why do you think this little response or voice is absolutely, in fact, this? And when they start to peel back the layers and think about it, which I think most people don't want to work backwards and analyze. When you start to mention these things, they're like, oh yeah, I guess you're right. And I'm not trying to put an impression on you. I'm just asking you to look inside and see what you're thinking.
What creeps you out at this point?
People and coyotes. That's pretty much it. People always ask, like, are you afraid? There've been situations where I've felt any range of emotions on investigations, and I never feel like I need to leave, even if I feel uncomfortable. But at the same time, most of the time, nothing happens, actually, nothing that I feel writing home about. And there's a lot of quiet evenings, but the main thing I'm afraid of is, you know, I'm at this abandoned place, or I'm at this hospital that is a prescribed haunted location that I paid to be at, but they warn me that trespassers come in. I'm afraid of that. And I'm afraid of the coyotes that are often on some of these investigations in the middle of nowhere.
People and coyotes. And
yep, gotta watch out.
Before I wrap up and let you go, actually, I did want to ask very quickly about your Ouija board collection, spirit board collection. How many do you have at this point?
Around 100. It's kind of messed up. When you come to my house, I'm like, open a drawer because I'm looking for something, and there's a stack of talking boards, because obviously I keep the historic ones for people to come see. So that's like 1940s and prior, typically out in the open. And then, you know, I have bookshelves, and I'll tuck in the, like, Victorian planchettes, or, like, you know, 1890s and such. And then in the back room, I have, like, the pop culture board. So I have, like, Scooby-Doo and Elvira and Ozzy Osbourne and all those things. So it's like, it's actually kind of comical, because you cannot enter a room in my house that doesn't have some sort of variation of a Ouija board in it.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of to be expected when, you know, like, it's something that kind of goes hand in hand with a lot of our mutual friends and the Talking Board Historic Society folks that we both know. Is there a Chase Ouija board? Is there a Quest Ouija board that you're on the hunt for?
I actually tackled that right when I started collecting. it was around a decade ago. So I wanted the wireless messenger that was made in Connecticut, and I wanted the first one that was ever made. And at this point, I will never have all of them. I don't think it's possible, even if you got every manufactured one. So it's just the ones I'm most interested are whatever pops up on eBay that I don't have yet, or whatever is, you know, at the antique mall, or someone contacts me with something, because it really is one of those things. Like, I thought collecting My Little Pony years ago was bad, and that I would never have all of the 80s My Little Ponies. And now I'm like, I got in something that is literally impossible to have them all. So I basically crossed off everything that I wanted, except for like variations and handmade, or, you know, pieces that there are very few of.
Right. Well, do you have a minute for a very silly game?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to throw up the animation for said silly game. Okay. It's called Discover, Debunk, Destroy. Sort of like, you know, Mary Bang Kill, but paranormal. And I give you three options. And what are you going to destroy? What are you going to discover? What are you going to debunk? Okay. Bigfoot, Nessie, and Jersey Devil. Discover, debunk, destroy.
Discover Nessie, because I'm obsessed with Nessie, or was in high school. I always just have like this whimsical feeling. I guess... Oh boy, that's tough. I really left myself with some bad options here. Nessie's my favorite, so I'm still sticking to that. But I guess you really hit me with a tough one. Okay, so I guess I would debunk Bigfoot, because I feel like Bigfoot might be a little bit, I don't know. This is hard. Why did you do this? Because there's so many communities, and I don't want to offend anyone, but I would debunk Bigfoot because I'm less interested in seeing him than the Jersey Devil, which kind of terrifies me a little bit. So I think the Jersey Devil would be the one that I would destroy.
Destroy.
because if I saw it in real life and I was in fear, I might, maybe, I don't know, like when you squash a spider and then you're like, maybe I shouldn't have done that because I needed to learn more about it. That's what the Jersey Devil has been. sorry to the Bigfoot communities.
I love that response. Don't worry, I made you pick one. Plus, I was just in Loch Ness not too long ago and took a little stroll in the water. Did not get eaten. Just got cold.
Think Nessie eats. I'd like to think of her as like kind of a unicorn in my mind, like just like something beautiful and mysterious. I think she was a gateway creature, or Nessie. And my personal feeling is, you know, that scene in Napoleon Dynamite when he is like, scientists, you know, tried to blow Nessie out of the water. That's my feeling about Nessie. So,
okay. Ghosts, demons, angels, discover, debunk, destroy.
Discover ghosts, because I think that I am obviously very entrenched into that side of things, and they interest me very much. And I think that there's so many things that a ghost could be, and it's the manifestation of energy has so many possibilities that I'm interested in that. I guess I would like to debunk angels. I apologize again to any angel communities out there. Regardless of the depictions, I always see like these viral posts that are like, angels actually look like this. I've never been interested in angels or anything with angels on them. And when I go into stores that have things with angels on them, even if they're like new age stores, I'm like, this isn't my vibe. So debunking angels would probably be the most... Because that's not saying like everything that's biblical. That's just like the biblical depiction of angels in that pastel, like 90s washed angels. They can go away. And I guess I would destroy demons because, well, you know, there are demons that are not evil or like the depiction we see in films. So it's not really fair, but they're just the odd one out. But if we're going to talk about the harmful if demons means the harmful and not harmful ones, and they do exist, and not all that is, you know, just made up to scare us and associated with biblical fear or whatever, then I guess I would destroy that. And the good demons would have to be, you know, a byproduct of that destruction.
Yeah. And I made you choose. So, you know, it's not your fault. Okay. we'll end on a internet style one. Slenderman, the Rake, and Nightcrawlers. Discover, debunk, destroy.
Destroy Slenderman. Because he's creepy. Discover Nightcrawlers. And I'm actually not familiar with the last one, the Rake.
The Rake, just another creepy pasta kind of creature.
Yeah, I've heard of that one. I apologize.
Oh, it's okay.
What is it like?
It's just like a creepy little dude or monster type thing. I think he's pretty much Slenderman adjacent. But, you know, but you're going to destroy Slenderman?
If people died in the name of Slenderman, we have to destroy him.
True, true. Okay.
In life, humans that are living died in the name of this Slenderman. So I can't bring those people back to life, but I can make sure it never happens again.
That's right. You are.
Does destroy mean delete?
Yeah, kind of like just wipe off the...
Like, we have destroyed the Slender Man and nothing can come forward.
Exactly. I mean, really, if I'm going to be honest, when I came up with this game, I was just looking for some alliteration and and destroy is what came up, all right?
This is really tough. I don't know. If anyone answers these, like, quickly with no response, like, no context, I want to know. I got to watch every time you do this now.
I like that you put thought into it, so I give you kudos on that one. but I will now let you off the hook because you performed admirably on these, on the Discover, Debunk, Destroy game.
And if I get Angel Bigfoot hate because of this, I'm sending it to you.
Send it my way.
Yeah.
Yeah, the team up of the Bigfoot and Angel communities.
It's a greeting card. Circling back to the greeting card, it's Bigfoot. He's got angel wings, and they're like, "How dare you?" And that's it.
Why couldn't, you know? Maybe Bigfoot is an angel. You know, I would appreciate a Bigfoot that is an angel as opposed to an angel that's like the as you said, sort of the greeting card angels or the overly cute pudgy angels or long flowing blonde hair angels. Those, I don't really care for those angels.
Like the curly blonde hair and like that blue and purple, like there's actually an angel talking board and I'm thinking of that right now and I'm like, like that kind of angel. Angels.
Yeah, I know. It cracks me up, those angel talking boards, because people are like, well, I don't use a Ouija board. That opens the portal to hell. But I use the angel board. It's the same thing.
I don't use Ouija boards, but I'll use this very specific talk. Ozzy Osbourne's fine. Scooby-Doo Ouija board, fine. And I always think it's like so interesting and like how people like project these like ideas on this stuff. What's the other one? The psychic circle and boards like that too. It's like, what happened here that it's acceptable?
Again, it goes back to, I think, people wanting to apply their own rules, like these safe zones, put it into a box. It's something unexplained, and I'm curious about the unexplained nature of the universe, but I'm going to put it in a wee little box just to contain it so I can wrap my hands around it and apply rules to it and say, okay, this is how it is. It's, you know, it's... It doesn't really
gaslighting, actually, when I get it on social media and they're like, I actually got one, a good one today. So this person said, we'll see what happens when you're on the news about my house with the talking boards. And it's like, I get these ones that are like threats. I'm like, you're creating something negative just by like leaving all these comments. But people are like, oh, you think you're fine now? Well, you'll see, or, you know, like mess around with those. And like I said, it's like gaslighting. You're like, you think you know what you're talking about, but you're just a little girl who doesn't know. And it's like, who are you to even say that? Like, I would never say anything like that to someone, even if I felt like what they were doing was wrong, unless it's affecting someone else. Like, just let people do their thing.
Yeah. One might think there just might be some misogyny and intolerance and threats on the internet.
Are you serious? News to me.
I know. I'm like mind blown, right?
Outside of this space, yeah, for sure.
Becky Ann Galatine, I appreciate your time today. Of course, everybody, you should follow her on TikTok and Instagram at My Bloody Galatine. I know she also has some other exciting things on the way that she's working on that she can't talk about yet, but when she is able to, we will happily bring her back. And Becky, I hope that I get to see you in person at some point at an event, get to hang out and just nerd out about spooky shit.
Oh yeah. I'm sure we'll be seeing each other, especially if in November when the time is right, we'll definitely be seeing each other then, but hopefully before then.
That's right. All right. Well, thank you again for your time and for everyone out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And guys, thank you for joining and listening and watching. Don't forget to subscribe, download every week, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you put your podcasts in your ear holes, and check out our Talking Strange videos at youtube.com/denageekus. Love to hear from you at Aaron Sagers on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Patreon, all over the place, and at Talk Strange Pod on Twitter. So wherever you are, until next time, be kind, stay spooky, and keep it weird.